Good morning, everybody. This is Turning Towards Life. It's 9:03 on a Sunday. I think it's the 9th of December today. It's my stepdaughter's 21st birthday today, so I do know the date once. It's a little bit different this week. This week I've got like a shirt on and I'm ready to go to a 21st birthday party. And last week I was all disheveled, having been up since 4 a.m. for my husband's 50th birthday. So I want to welcome you in all my readiness and freshness for this call, and to also say thank you to Justin for bringing this wonderful source on love and fear. And I'm really up for the conversation and noticing yet again that I sit here and I feel invited by the words and lucky to be able to respond in myself to the words so that my nervous system totally settles when we get to do this. And so I feel very, very grateful once more for this pause in my general life that allows us to have this conversation and be together on a Sunday morning. It's very beautiful.
Thanks, Lizzie. Morning, everyone. It's always true that I feel so delighted, so glad that we're doing this, and so glad for all of you who listen and watch in. We're creeping towards 800 people in our community, and
Really?
many other people I know catch up in all kinds of wonderful ways on the bus and on the train and in bed and all kinds of things afterwards. And it feels to me this morning a particular gift to be able to do this every week, to take some time to talk together about things that feel very real. And I was talking this week with someone who's very dear to me, who's part of my immediate support network, actually my coaching supervisor, who I've been working with for nearly 9 years, 8 and a bit years. And we were talking together about how rare it is in the world for anyone to have places where you can talk about what's real and what's here. And so many of us have sort of orbits of relationships where that's difficult. It's hard, or feels unwelcome in some way to go past the initial, maybe very lovely but very superficial kind of contact, where we can get into something that's real and where we get trembly. And fear for me is a getting trembly thing. And I've been looking for sources all week, and there are many wonderful ones, until I went back to see if I'd written anything about fear, and it turned out I had written a few. So I picked one of those as a way in this morning. So I'm going to start. Just a reminder for anyone who's, I'm just having to adjust something here on my computer before I can read it. Bear with me, everyone, 1 second. What I wanted to say to anyone who was maybe joining us for the first time is that you can always find the sources that we're reading. So if you're part of our Facebook group, we post them every week on a Friday or Saturday, so you can read ahead of time. But if you're coming to this conversation, as many people do, afterwards, go to turningtowards.life, which is the little micro website where we host all of the recordings and all of the texts, and you'll always find the source there as well. So this is a piece called Fear is Easy. And it's written by someone for whom fear is really easy. That's why I wrote this. Fear is easy, really easy. It spreads like wildfire. My fear becoming your fear, becoming their fear, becoming my fear again. It makes us feel special. If I'm so afraid, there must be important things to do, like saving myself or saving the company or saving the country. And at last, because of fear, I have a role to play. It makes things look simple. There's no choice here, no nuance, no time to talk together or think together about what's really called for, or if we're doing the right thing, or what the consequences over time might be. There's just action. This action, my action, and now. It helps us look right. How dare you suggest another way or a different way? Can't you see what's at stake here? How risky this is? How much we have to lose? It saves us from having to listen to one another. If you're not with me, you're against me, and if you're against me, you must be wrong, and it's because you're wrong, and all of those others of you who are wrong that were in this terrifying mess in the first place. It saves us from having to think that there might be another way to see this, that your point of view might have merit or integrity or something to offer. It saves us from shame at all the ways I'm hurting you or hurting myself or hurting those who will come after us. It sells the idea that I'm the best, that my way is the right way, that we're the chosen ones, that they're out to get us, that you have to work harder, that you must never stop, that our values are under threat, that we have to do this vital but terrible thing, that after all, it's only business or politics or necessity. It allows us to justify these punishing targets, our culture of hyperactivity, my monitoring of your every move, the hours I expect you to work, our obsession with measurement and deliverables, my not listening, our race to the lowest common denominator, your being available at every moment, our treating others as objects. Of course, fear works best when it doesn't display itself as fear. It's at its most potent when dressed up as civility and best practice and just doing business and competency frameworks and HR policy and micromanagement and SMART goals and this is work, not a playground, don't you know? Fear is easy and fear is cheap, but it's dignity that sets the human spirit free to contribute and create and address our difficulties and listen and change things and improve our situation. And dignity takes work and courage and honesty and sincerity and integrity and wisdom and compassion and humility and love. Yes, love, not a much respected word in many organizations or in politics, and easily dismissed by the easy politics and business of fear, but it is indeed love that reminds us how brilliant human beings can be, how capable, how varied, how much there is to marvel at in our situation and our capacity, and how much we need all of this right now, just as we always have done.
Of course, fear works best when it doesn't display itself as fear. It's at its most potent when dressed up as civility and best practice and just doing business and competency frameworks and HR policy and micromanagement and SMART goals and this is work, not a playground, don't you know? Fear is easy and fear is cheap, but it's dignity that sets the human spirit free to contribute and create and address our difficulties and listen and change things and improve our situation. And dignity takes work and courage and honesty and sincerity and integrity and wisdom and compassion and humility and love. Yes, love. Not a much respected word in many organizations or in politics, and easily dismissed by the easy politics and business of fear. But it is indeed love that reminds us how brilliant human beings can be, how capable, how varied, how much there is to marvel at in our situation and our capacity, and how much we need all of this right now, just as we always have done. What's that like for you to hear?
It's always such a treat to hear words. I think we talked about this a little while ago, what happens when words get liberated, how powerful they are. They don't sound like mine. I remember writing them. But here's the other thing, Lizzie. I wanted to bring this week because I've been noticing again, as I have done, or finding again, as I have done many, many times, how easy fear is for me. So I wrote this, you know, part of this piece that we've just read is a sort of a rail against, a tirade against the way that fear infects our organizations and our politics and gets dressed up and our families and then gets dressed up as something else. And this was, you know, we dress it up as just reasonableness or something. But it's present for me now because, for one reason or another, some some that I can tell what they are and some which are harder for me to tell what they are. I can see how quickly I get thrown into fear. And what I got reminded of and really touched by hearing you read the end of this piece was, I'm sure this is, must be true for many other people, how being afraid so quickly distances me from my own dignity and care and love. Like it, the very qualities that I have that are most available to respond to whatever is going on in the world are the ones that get furthest away from me when I'm afraid, and particularly when I'm afraid without A, knowing that I'm afraid, or B, more importantly, without telling anybody that I'm afraid. So it's when I'm back in relationship, but to be back in relationship in the midst of my most afraid times means calls on getting in contact with at least some of this, even if it's in, even if I can't find it in myself, knowing that it's true in someone else, that they are dignity and love and care. And because of how diminishing fear can be, how easily it leads down the path of, at least for me, but this is the part about politics and business and all of these kind of things, how quickly it distances us from what we, the qualities that human beings have that can help us to respond. So super fascinating to me how this very ordinary human response that we've all learned, you know, we've all learned fear, I think, and so it seems very ordinary how most of the time how unhelpful it is, and how urgent it is, how important it is that we find, most of us find, way more sophisticated ways of responding to the things that we are most terrified about.
Yeah, it's really interesting having listened to you read this and just listening to what you're saying now, because I can feel what happens in my body when I kind of go down the path of fear. So the first however many paragraphs you were reading, when it was talking about the nature of fear, this passage that you wrote, I could feel myself narrowing almost, like it has the effect of shutting down many, many things. It's like it has a reducing factor to it. And I feel like that's one of the natures, one of the things about fear, the nature of fear, is that it has this attribute of closing things down and narrowing our field of awareness and or choices. And that's how I felt as you were reading it. It kind of feels like it cuts so much off. And the tricky thing about that, you were talking about getting back in contact and saying you're afraid, but the tricky bind is that when we are afraid, the last thing we want is for either ourselves or anyone else to notice that we're afraid, because we're also ashamed and defended and raging, and for anyone to point into the underneath of that experience when we're in it, it's like, don't you tell me I'm afraid, I'm completely right now, you know, I'm completely on the money in this view I have, don't you. And it's like the place that gets touched into when we either identify it as fear or someone else does, it's a really tricky one, because we also have to then somehow surrender. And in a state of fear, we're in the grips of something. And so hearing this read is just really magnifying and clarifying the dynamic of fear, and how far away love feels at that point, how far away holding feels, how far away nuance and distinctions about the nature of life, it feels far, and it's scary, and we feel small and like there's something to defend and our life depends on it. And it's such a tricky cycle to break. And really, Justin, it's making me think of, you know, one of our readings the other day, which was The Body is Like Mary. I feel like this is what I have been also encountering and pointing into with the sources I've been trying to bring as well about divinity, because at some point, it doesn't seem that there is any other choice but into some other realm of faith. Because many circumstances of our lives just add up to being really terrified.
Mm.
And because it's such a bind, it feels like the gift of the bind, the gift of the fear, is that at some point we have to choose some other dimension to exist in our selves that doesn't stop us from making the tea and wheeling the bins out when the bin man's going to come and being in relationship with people, but that also gives us a way more robust foundation than our personalities to rely on for our well-being. And I think that's the inquiry that feels so calling to me right now is, who are we? Like, yes, I'm frightened. And is that the realest thing I can reach for? And or can I find something that includes that fear, that embraces that fear, that says, oh, yes, there it is. But that's bigger than that. That's more whole than that. That has this view that you're talking about that gets cut off with fear, that holds more than it at the same time as dignifying it and allowing it to be there, but doesn't stop there. It's like, yes, and we're afraid, and there's something else here that I could stand on that's far more firm than fear, that's far less brittle than the crispy caramelness of fear that could just, you can't make decisions on fear because they don't feel robust enough. They don't feel like they've taken enough into account to be a sensible, good decision. And so I think this is such a beautiful and kind of comprehensive articulation of what that is, that, and then at the end of what you've written, it points to this big fat and, which you've beautifully called love, which for me is not different to this other thing that is so hard to speak about. And that's the other thing, fear is really easy to talk about, and then you get to the kind of the thing that's bigger than fear and you think, oh my gosh, well, that's much harder to say words about. But you've done an amazing job of that as well, which is courage and honesty and sincerity and integrity and wisdom and compassion and humility. There are virtues that seem to belong in the realm of the bigger than.
Yes.
And I feel like this is an invitation to remember that those things are still here, that are still available to us, even when we're absolutely petrified and being horrible to people and, you know, lashing out or withdrawing or being grumpy or snapping or all of the stuff that happens when you live in close proximity with other human beings and or on your own and you're giving yourself that hard time.
Hmm. Hmm. I've been listening a lot to recently to Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist teacher who, if anybody who's with us in this conversation hasn't come across his work, I want to so strongly recommend because it's so kind and so truthful. And he said this amazing thing, he said a whole load of amazing things, but there are two that are on my mind to bring in, one of which I'll say now, which is another way of talking about what you've just been saying. I think, Lizzie, it's a sort of, it's another angle on it, which is that fear, so first of all, fear is contagious for the reasons that you said. It struck me whilst you were talking that our personality structures are mostly fear-based. We end up the way that we are in order to prevent all kinds of things happening. And so, of course, when we get afraid, it's really, really ordinary for other people to get triggered into being afraid around us. And then we all doing this big cover-up, like you said, because fear is like that often. It hides itself through fear of, we're afraid of what would happen if it became apparent that we were afraid, among other things. So one of the reasons for writing this piece is, you know, just arising in my own life, a feel of responsibility that I can't just be afraid. It's not okay. I will feel it, but it's not okay just to uncritically hang out in it and then all the consequences that come from it. So Thich Nhat Hanh says this, which I thought was so brilliant. And it's so easy to say, but it had really never occurred to me until I came across his way of saying it. Fear is always about something that hasn't happened yet. And so he says, even when you're in the situation where somebody threatening comes into the room and it appears that you might get hurt, for example, he said even at that moment, so he's deliberately picking an extreme example because many of the things that we get afraid about aren't even that immediate close in to us. Even in that moment, what we're afraid of is what might happen.
Mm.
That most often when we find ourselves in the midst of something, not everything, but many, many of the things that we find if we pay attention to ourselves, that we have qualities that enable us to respond to it. We're just in it. And then bringing our courage or our love or our intelligence or our creativity or whatever. So seeing this has been an absolute revelation because my body feels fear a lot and I'm starting much, much more to wonder about and to say to myself, so what's happening now is not the thing I'm afraid of. When I get to the thing that I'm afraid of, if it happens, I may well have all kinds of means of responding to it, which may not make it better, but I'm going to have means of responding to it. But right now, what's happening is a bodily experience that's really in me more than it is anywhere else. It's not the actual thing. And that bodily experience is shared by lots of other human beings and it's contagious. So what am I going to do? Am I going to just behave as if the thing I'm frightened of is happening now? And what a trap that is. So I've been feeling very, very frightened about what's happening with recently about what's happening with the climate and with insects and with, but then I realized that there's a way in which I get living as if the consequences I'm imagining are present now. And not only is that a really awful way to respond, it robs this moment of time from what it really is, and it robs me of my capacity. And so then, yes, I love the way that you're saying it, very touched by it, that when we can find that of ourselves that's outside of our usual way of knowing ourselves, that you called the divine, which I think is a beautiful word for this, or our essential humanity or our essential selves. There's lots of different language you might find for it. We can often find a way to come at the very same situation from an angle that's completely different. And this is the hardest thing to say when I'm caught by the obviousness of fear, but to come at life with love and joy and happiness and possibility, like all of those can be present if we'll take care of them. And I'm, of course, you'll know that I'm not saying this by way of some kind of let's pretend bad things aren't happening. It's actually the opposite. It's right in the middle of the complexity of life. Can we yet find contact with this vast array of human possibility that we are all the time?
Yeah. And I feel like, as well as knowing my goodness, it's to know the goodness, which is more than a human thing. It's inclusive of, and it's more than that. And I don't know, somehow I feel like from what you just said, my mind is going into, and my feeling is spreading into, you know, where do we even come from? How does my heart keep beating? There is a kind of connectedness that is life itself that feels like it allows all of this and holds all of this, and that's what I feel like, you know, such a challenge for me to articulate, but I experience it very strongly, which is this faithfulness in something more than just my understanding of what existence is. Like, I don't know all of this stuff, but I have different kinds of intelligence than my knowing that also exist in my body that are harder to put language to, but give me some basis of faithfulness. You know, like you said, Justin, if you're imagining what's going to happen and it's terrible, so you just don't do that thing, like a presentation, for example, or something that you find really scary. It could, you know, people have all kinds of different things, don't we, that frighten us. But we're fearful, like Thich Nhat Hanh says, of the thing that hasn't happened yet. And there's a way that I might not do that thing because of that fear. I might just say, oh, well, I can't do that. I'm not capable of that. I'm not going to step into that because it's too frightening for me. The consequences feel too frightening. And then we either find a kind of faith that allows us to take a step, but mostly I think we find probably another human being that sees something more than just our fearful imagination of what might happen.
Yes.
And someone says to us, well, I get that you're afraid and I see all of your other things about you that will probably come into play that you can't see right now. And basically, would you be willing to believe me and have a go and see what happens? And then often for me, something happens like, oh, I didn't actually implode when I did that. And I was really afraid, but I did it. And somehow someone saw that in me, and that gave me something to hook into that wasn't just my fearful thoughts about what might happen. And so I did it. And I think that for me is a representation of the bigger than usness, which is often through another human being as well, where sometimes it is just me on my own and I'm in my own conversation with myself about faith, but then my faith gets brought to me by other humans as well, where I think, oh, well, because you can see that, maybe I am blind, maybe I can't see. And that those people are the ones that I'm so grateful for, and I'm sure I am that for other people too. And that for me is the gift of being in community and in relationship in this real way that you and your supervisor were talking about, i.e. it's hard to find spaces where we can be this vulnerable, and that this faith can be contacted through ourselves and other people, because we're often doing the politeness and competency and everything's fine thing, and we're all pretty terrified. So I think it's such a big invitation that you're making in this wonderful piece of writing, Justin, and it's really inviting me into the really big conversation that I know I need to keep having with myself. And I know that on one level, we all need to be having with ourselves, because it is human to feel frightened, and it is very human to love and to be bigger than our fear. And the tricky thing is that I think probably our world on balance spends a hell of a lot more time in the fear place than the love place.
Yes. And it's amazing what you just said, Lizzie, that it's human to be bigger than our fear, but we forget. And one of the reasons why the world spends a lot of its time in fear rather than in this other bigger place is because it really suits the way the world is made to keep that going. I think it suits our economic model, and it suits up right now, it suits our political model, and it suits having people buckle down and not complain, and it suits tripling, you know, profit, and it suits all of those kind of things. Ah, let there be light.
Realize
dark is. And so it's rare. It's unfortunately rare for many of us to be in contact often with either with our own, like having practices for ourselves that will have us remember and be in contact. And I think body practices, I mean, it's really simple breathing, really simple things. It's rare for many of us to have access to that, but also then to have people who'll do what you're saying, who will take the trouble to be in contact with their own, when they use this word divinity again, because I think it's a lovely word, their own vastness, their own capacity, and will then show us our capacity right when we're feeling caught in the smallness of things. And that's a gift actually that I think we have to give to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that in order to give it to one another, it also calls upon us, any of us who want to do that, who feel a responsibility or a call to do that, to do whatever we can in our lives to keep on remembering and being in contact with. And that's why a list of qualities is one way to go. Our courage and wisdom and love and generosity and creativity, and that, you know, could that virtues like that, because if we're not, we quickly become caught up in and transmitters of the no hope that comes from being so afraid.
Mm.
and you had, you made, you know, beautiful examples of giving a presentation. And in my mind, as you were talking, I was thinking, oh yes, and that conversation with a member of my family that I'm avoiding because I'm afraid of how I will feel and that I won't be able to cope with it when it happens. And standing up in the world of politics for things that I care about, and not giving up about the environmental changes that are happening in our world because I'm too afraid of what it will be like, and taking what action I can. All of those start to become available to us when we turn this way.
And also, Justin, I feel particularly moved. There was a little sentence you said, which is, it's not okay to just be fearful. Like in your life, you were saying, there's a, oh no, that's not where it ends.
Yeah.
There's some kind of vow or something, which is, okay, so I'm afraid, but it's not enough to just be afraid. There's something else I'm committed to other than my fear.
Yes.
And I feel kind of really moved by that thing that you said, which is like, oh, this is where I am, and there's a whopping great commitment to the what's other than this, what's beyond this, what's more than this, that I know is there and that I seek and that I am committed to, that that keeps me real, that keeps me not hypnotized by just being fearful, but to always be able to remember through that commitment that there's something other than this fearful response that's available to me either now or in 2 days or at some point. And I have the wherewithal, the practices, the community, the resources to seek that out, to seek out the things that help me so that I don't stay here and just be here. I could be here and something else at the same time, but it's not enough just to think that this is reality.
Yes.
This is my life.
Yes. And there, and I'm going to say back by way of ending something you just said, which I think is so important and moving, which is, when we find ourselves, when we catch that we are caught in fear and it's become super convincing, that's the moment to do whatever we can to find a way back in contact with the resourcefulness that we have. And I was thinking, yes, you know, for some of us, we have people right to hand and it's talk to that person. And others of us, we don't yet have that around us. So in the moment, it might be going for a walk and among the trees and knowing that the trees aren't afraid, because that can really help. Or it might mean reading a book or listening to a talk or putting on a piece of music or something, whatever will help us take that first small step out of the constraint of our fear is a really necessary step, because then there are other steps that might yet be taken. Find a community of people to be with, make contact with other, you know, I could make a long list. But in what you said was this seed of, what do you do right when it seems like nothing else is possible? That's the moment to find whatever we can to stand in a bigger space than just I'm afraid. And it's never just, as you said, it's never just, oh, I'm not afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Of course I'm afraid. And so this is where we have to finish for this week. I'm very, very grateful for this conversation. And
me too.
Very glad indeed, everyone who's been joining us. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. We're so grateful that you are up for this with us. It's amazing.
And we'll be back next Sunday. All being well. We'll see you then. Take care, everyone. Bye. Bye-bye.